Today's reading is Proverbs 31, verse 10 to 31. An excellent wife, who can find? She's far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm. All the days of her life, she seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She's like the ships of the merchant. She brings her food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates when he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed, her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her of the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. This is the word of God.
Welcome to you if you joined us while we're singing. My name's Mark. I'm one of the leaders here at City. We're concluding our sermon series through the book of Proverbs today with Proverbs 31. For next week and really the rest of the summer, we go into the book of Psalms. So we're staying in the Old Testament. Psalms is something that we've done now for the last 8 years or so. We just picked and started at Psalm 1, and we pick up next week on Psalm, looking to Ben, Psalm number 83. Was it? Yeah, 83. Okay, so that's how far we've got through. Can you tell that I'm off next week? I don't know. Enjoy. 83? Who knows? Could be 85. But we're finishing off Proverbs with Proverbs 31, so I invite you to have that open in front of you, either if you've got a Bible or you can look it up on your phone so that you can follow along. Here's a shocking revelation right at the top. I'm not a woman. But even as I read Proverbs 31, I kind of felt a little bit overwhelmed. Like, how does a woman live up to this woman who gets up early before it's light, whose candle, her lamp doesn't go out, so she's staying up late as well. So she's both a night owl and a lark, and not just some sort of exhausted pigeon in the middle. So she's up early, she's going to bed late. She has a husband and children to manage, but she's decided that she's going to run a business as well. In fact, her business has different aspects to it. So she's clearly some sort of clothes maker, but also in real estate because she's bought a field. She spins her own clothes. She's not just kind of buying it off Temu and then selling it on. She raises children and has time to support the poor. She speaks with wisdom, which, given all of those other things, it's not just shut up. It's quite stressful. She does it all with joy and dignity. This is a lot. If you are a woman here thinking, I'm just trying to get through the day, how do you come to Proverbs 31? I'm quite glad that there isn't a Proverbs 32 that's the man equivalent. You know, he works a 14-hour day. He has an amazing marriage with a beautiful wife who listens to him all the time, always picks up his boxers from the floor. He never leaves his towel on the bed after it's gotten damp. He has an amazing body because even though he works 14 hours a day, he still has time to go and work out really well at the gym every day. He's the first to buy a pint for his friends. He's working, he owns his own business, but he's also got like a crypto side hustle and a podcast. He's an amazing father. He never gets grumpy. He speaks with wisdom and love. He takes his kids out for a little daddy-daughter, daddy-son dates. He always gets it right. They always have his time and attention, and he's never irritable. I'm really glad that that's not there. So what's Proverbs 31 doing here? In a book full of kind of principles of wise living and how to kind of flourish in life, why does it end with this perfect vision of this wife that I think is fair to say is not wholly realistic? Why is it there? Is it just kind of at the end, you know, I mean, journey through the end, okay, well, I don't want to, you know, pride comes before fall, let's not do that. And, you know, I don't want to speak too early, too loudly to people early in the morning. And then you get to 31, and it's like, let's crush the women under a weight of expectation. Why? Why is it here? Five observations why I think it's here, why I think it's important. You ready? First, it's designed to inspire us, not just women, all of us, is designed to inspire us, not intimidate us. It's designed to inspire us, not intimidate us. That's why it has actually really beautiful, evocative language in it. So verse 10, hey buddy, an excellent wife who can find, she is far more precious than jewels. Or verse 28, her children rise up and call her blessed. We were training all week for that. Well done, buddy, right at the right time. Her children rise up and call her blessed. What a beautiful thing to hear if you're a mother. Your children rise up and they praise you and not just say, can I have a snack? This is not a how-to list for Christian womanhood. It's a poetic portrait of wisdom in action. Do you remember right back at the start of the book of Proverbs, how is wisdom personified? Well, wisdom is personified as a woman. And so this portrait ends, it's the beauty of wisdom spelled out right at the end of the book in the most exquisite detail. It's looking at Lady Wisdom and all of the things that she does and the beauty that she brings into a household. It's not a checklist, but designed to call us out of ourselves, to inspire us to something greater. And so women, as we begin, I want to encourage you that this is not a job description. It is not a checklist. You're supposed to read these things and think, okay, how does that inspire me? She's strong. She makes her arms strong. She has a business. That's okay. She causes her household to flourish. That all of those things are celebrated in the book of Proverbs. Where does that resonate with you? Not where does that put more pressure on you? That's what Proverbs 31 is designed to do. Similarly, for men, this should shape what it is we honor in women. The passage concludes with, your charm is deceitful, beauty is fleeting. Rather, it praises character, wisdom, godliness. And so it's applying to the women in the sense of, how does this inspire us forward? And then in men, what should we be esteeming? What should we be celebrating? This portrait is designed to stir our desire for the beautiful life that living with wisdom can bring. You know, it's a bit like 1 Corinthians 13. Thanks for coming and visiting me, buddy. I'm going to put you back over here. It's a bit like 1 Corinthians 13 or the Sermon on the Mount. So you read 1 Corinthians 13, that's Paul's list of what love is like. He's saying, you know, love is patient, love is kind, it does not boast, it keeps a record of wrongs, it does not envy, it always hopes, it always holds fast to the truth. And you read those, this perfect description of love and think, well, how on earth am I supposed to fully emulate that? And we read it at weddings in order to really put pressure on the couple as they begin, because it's an ideal. Or the Sermon on the Mount, where Jesus talks about that perfect kingdom life and the perfect holiness, righteousness that we have to have. No anger ever, no lust ever. Gouge out your eye, cut off your hand. Whoa. It's idealized. It's a perfect picture. And those two examples, like Proverbs 31, is designed to do two things in our hearts simultaneously. The first is, it's supposed to thrill us with the beauty of the thing that's described. Love, kingdom life, life with wisdom. And it's to drive us to ask, how is this possible? How can I have the beautiful life that this passage describes? How can I embody something of the love the 1 Corinthians talks about? How can I live that righteous life that Jesus describes? This passage is designed to inspire, not intimidate. Second observation. Proverbs 31 calls us here to examine our hearts. Or to put it another way, it asks us, what do you fear? I think that the controlling verse for the whole passage is right down at the very end. It's the conclusion. Charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. How does any woman look at this passage and not feel crushed under the weight of it? Or, forget this passage at the moment, I think there's a weight of expectation that is placed particularly upon our sisters by the world. But having to be successful, get a good education, find a spouse, be a godly wife, be a godly mother, do all of those things. And that brings its own weight. How do you stand up under that weight? Answer? Well, it depends what you fear. If you fear anything but the Lord, the expectations of this passage and what it places on you, what others place on you and what you place on yourself are going to exhaust you, overwhelm you, and ultimately crush you. It is only when we fear the Lord that we can be free to see the beauty of what Proverbs 31 describes. To see it as a picture to aspire to, however falteringly, rather than feeling burdened under the weight of it. Now remember, Proverbs began with this, you know, what is the beginning of wisdom? Fear of the Lord. All the way through, it's been talking about the fear of the Lord. And what is the fear of the Lord? Well, it's not terror. It's not being scared of Jesus. But it is a right reverence, placing him on the throne of our lives, esteeming him above all else. It's an awe at who he is and what he has done. It is a commitment to listen to him and to follow him. As we consider whether or not we do this, it exposes the deeper motives of our hearts, doesn't it? If we fear other people, their opinion of us, if we fear failure, letting others down, if we fear the future and the possibility of changing circumstances or of losing something or someone, then all of the things that this woman does in Proverbs 31 are going to weigh so heavy, because we need those. Those things are the things that are controlling us. Those things are the things that we are esteeming. Those things are the things that we're in awe of. They validate our identity. They give us a sense of place. They help us to make sense of who we are. And if we lose them, then we're adrift. Where are we? We need our family life. We need our job, our success, our good deeds, our charitableness. We need to be regarded as being successful or kind or whatever it is in order to validate our existence, in order to know that we are someone. And if that's the fear at the root of your heart, that beast will never be satisfied. It will always lead you to anxiety of, have I done enough? Or what if I lose it? But the fear of the Lord is freeing. In the fear of the Lord, there is liberation and there is life. If the fear of the Lord is at the root of our motives, that is, if we're living to honor him, please him, follow him, rest in him, secure in who he is and in his love for us and what he has declared us to be, that you, women, are forgiven, that you are a daughter of the king, adopted forever into his family, never to be sent away, loved wholly, eternally, lavishly. If that's at the root of who you are, then you can give yourself to your work, your family, your successes, or your failures. You can give yourself to compassion and peaceableness and see them all as a gift, as something that elicits joy, as an act of service. See, this is the rest. This is the security, the freedom, the fear of the Lord gives. This is what we ultimately realize in the gospel of the Lord Jesus. If you don't know what it is to be forgiven by Jesus, to have your sin taken away by him, to be assured of who you are in him, then you haven't understood the gospel. That's what Jesus came to do. He came to give you rest, to set you free. By taking on the burden of your debt, you no longer need to prove who you are. Because the only opinion that will ever matter about your life has already been declared. It's declared at the cross of Calvary. Loved, accepted, forgiven, rejoiced over. Let that be at the root of your heart, and it will free you to love and to serve and to work with joy. So please, do not come away from this passage this morning thinking, well, I clearly need to add more things to my schedule. I got to go and buy a field. Where do I even get a field? Not in Dublin. Need to add more things. I need to do more. No. You need to make sure, okay, is the root controlling fear of my heart the Lord or something else? Third observation. This passage is here to show us the fruit of what wise living yields, the fruit of wisdom. Again, the book begins with this call to find wisdom through fearing the Lord, and it builds out all of the different ways that you can pursue wisdom in the different areas of life. You could listen back in Spotify and you'd see the little kind of topical section where we look at wisdom in conflict and words and leadership and pride and all of the other ones that I didn't write down and have forgotten now. And now at the end of the book, there is this description, this depiction of the beautiful, wise life in the form of this noble woman, this noble wife. It's supposed to inspire us all, male and female. So what does this wise life look like? But let me pick out just a couple very briefly. That when wisdom takes root in a person, when wisdom takes root in this wife, in this woman, it makes her trustworthy, loving, Verse 11 and 12, the heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. What does it look like to grow in wisdom? It looks like to grow in seeking the good of others. And being somebody that others place their trust in, rely upon. The wise life is the life that is diligent and prepared. So verse 13 onwards, let's find out. She seeks wool and flax. She works with willing hands. She is like the ships of the merchant. She brings food from afar. And down to verse 21, she is not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She's working hard. And she's preparing for the future. What does the wise life look like? Wisdom has already been encouraging us to, you know, go to the ant, to learn the lessons of the ant who is working away day and night. Something that's celebrated, something that is seen as good, and that delaying of gratification, looking to the future, making sure that things are put aside and prepared. And so the book concludes saying, yeah, that's a wise person right there. Wisdom makes her strong. Verse 17, she dresses herself with strength. She makes her arms strong. This idea of dressing herself with strength means that your strength is just kind of covering every part of her. That she's strong intellectually. She's not easily taken for a mug. She's strong spiritually. She is resilient and knows who God is and what he has for her. That she has ballast in the boat of her life. That when suffering and trial comes, she doesn't capsize. That doesn't mean that she doesn't feel pain. That doesn't mean that she doesn't experience trial. But those trials are met in the context of eternity and who God is. She's maybe even strong physically. I love this one. Wisdom, the wise life, the wise wife laughs at the days to come. Verse 25. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the days to come. What does that mean? Well, it's going back to the fear of the Lord. Because if the fear of the Lord, if your relationship with God is at the root of who you are, then one of the consequences of that is it begins to dispel anxiety about the future, because you know that the one who controls the future knows you, sees you, loves you, and has good for you eternally. And so she's able to laugh at the days to come. She understands Jesus' words in the Sermon on the Mount of, you know, tomorrow has troubles of its own. I'll deal with the troubles for today and trust the Lord with the rest. Does that mean that she never worries? Perhaps not necessarily. But again, it's about what is in the core. What's the ballast in the boat? It's of a security of who God is and that he is the God who sees and who loves her. What does the wise life, the wise wife look like? She is compassionate and seeks the good of others. Verse 20, she opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. If we are to grow as wisdom, as male or female, to look to the needs of others is a key marker for what it means to live wisely in the world. To live wisely in the world that God has made. And so it's worth reflecting, not as checklist, not as job description, but as inspiration. As we look through, and there are more, but those are the ones that we've just picked out briefly. Trustworthiness, love of others, diligence and preparedness, strength, intellectually, emotionally, spiritually, being able to laugh at the days to come, or compassion and good for others. Here's the question. Which one of those inspires you Which one of those resonates with you and you think, that's something that I'd love to grow in? That's something that I would like over the next year, 5 years, for God to grow in me. Which one is it? Fourth observation. Part of the reason why this passage is here is because when we see a wise life, it is to be praised. Again, verse 30. Charm is deceitful, beauty is vain. But the woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. C.S. Lewis, who wrote the Chronicles of Narnia, said that joy wasn't fully realized until it was expressed. The joy needs to be voiced. It needs to be said out loud in praise of others. And so, we're going to do that. Over the last week, I have been hounding the husbands of City Church, those husbands who are members, and I have asked them to send me anonymously things that they would praise about their wives. Here are some of the responses that I have been sent, and you can try and work out which one's yours if you like. Or you can just pick the one that you like and don't ask, because if you ask, this could go really well and really help the rest of your day, gentlemen, or it could go really badly. So we'll see. Here's a bunch. Some of them are quite long, so I edited them down. You can say, oh, did you say more than that? And you're like, no. I thank God for my wife showing so much kindness, even when she's hurt by my failures. I'm thankful to God and would praise my wife by pointing out her great love to serve and to be part of God's ministry, by making new people in the church feel welcome, by inviting them over, by sharing the gospel with her friends and colleagues, by being there for people in their time of need. I really thank God for her quiet bravery. She left everything that she knew to give us a better future. Living in the new country every day takes faith, and she handles it with so much grace. I'm grateful to God for her and for her strength behind the scenes. She probably doesn't even realize how much I admire her. But when I see her raising our kids in a country that is not hers, while keeping our faith strong at home, I know that she's building something that will last forever. I thank God for my wife because she is so compromising, dedicated to God in prayer and to helping people. I love my wife! Exclamation mark. Her passion for Jesus is contagious. Her heart for myself and for her people is one that is full of care. She is a daily reminder to me of what grace is. My wife shows me every day what it is to care for others and consider their needs. Because of her example, I've learned to be more sensitive, more compassionate, more thoughtful and aware. She's helped me to be more intentional in my life and in my walk with the Lord. She loves me even when I'm unlovable. She has set her steadfast love on me. I'm grateful for my wife, who has a listening ear and who is always patient, ready to make me feel heard even when she's had a long day. She's a friend, a confidant, an assistant therapist, a prayer partner. She reminds me every day that she was sent from God. I praise my wife for loving me unconditionally, helping us to grow together spiritually, and in all the areas of our life. She's been sent by God and is the answer to my prayers. My wife is more patient, caring, gracious, and loving than I could ever hope to be. She's a wonderful mother, whose chief desire is that her husband and her children love the Lord and follow him whatever they do. My wife brings the spark of action, steady, of action into our marriage. Not busy for busyness' sake, but always longing for and encouraging us towards a life that is filled with more than just placation and compromises. I'm grateful that God has blessed me with a wife whose core trust in him cannot be shaken, with a heart that longs to see our family grow into the people God has called us to be. Last one. My wife always keeps me anchored. She doesn't hesitate to gently pull me back to the Lord when I'm drifting or stuck in a rut. There's a lot of joy and laughter in our marriage, and I'm grateful for the way that she lightens the load. We're also just really good friends. She's also such a steady comfort and support, not just to me, but to our family. I admire her perseverance. When she goes through a heavy or dark time, her trust in our Father will carry her. It seems to grow her deeper and deeper instead of weaker. Seeing her grow challenges me to be more honest and open about my own heart too. It's such an encouragement to walk this journey with her. In praise of the wives of City Church. Why did we do that? Well, because it's right to praise wisdom when we see it. It's right to praise godliness. Why? Here's a couple of reasons. It gives us joy. It's a good thing to do. It makes me feel happy to sit there in a Friday afternoon and think, okay, what do I want to praise my wife for? And maybe you husbands, maybe you felt that. It was certainly an encouragement and a joy to me to get those messages. I think this is wonderful. So why do we do it? It gives us joy. Second, it's an honor to God. Because one of the beautiful things about marriage is that you get a front row seat to what the Lord is doing in another human being's life. And every now and again, you see the person that they one day will be. And you think, wow, I'm so blessed that I get to see that up front. It also, because it strengthens her. It strengthens her to continue in the good and wise life that she has cultivated. And it inspires us all, male, female, married, single. I asked the husbands of City Church to praise their wives because this is a passage about a wife. But what would our church be like if actually we praised the wisdom and godliness that we saw in one another? As you share a prayer point in community group and you come back 3 weeks later and you give an update on how that situation that you've been praying for, that you asked the people to pray for, has gone. And the rest of the group turns around and said, you've dealt with that with so much wisdom. That must have been so painful. But do you remember that proverb that talks about how it is to your glory to overlook an offense? It's just come to mind as you were talking about that painful relationship. And I know that that was hard for you, but I praise God that actually he's grown you in wisdom through it. I say, you've really stepped up in terms of your diligence, your preparedness. I see that. And I want to praise you for it. I want to honor God in that. Imagine if in our little community groups, not just in our families, not just in our marriages, this isn't just, well, only married people can enjoy those benefits. No, absolutely not. What if we had that culture of praising the growth that we perceived in one another? That would make for quite a joyful community, I would have thought. I mean, the Irish people are going to be impossible because we hate to be complimented, and we're just going to be like, oh no, shut up, you stink. But if we can get over ourselves, it might be quite a lovely thing. Don't you think? Last observation. Why is this passage here? It's to inspire us, not to intimidate us. It causes us to examine our hearts and what we fear. It shows us the fruit of wisdom, and it calls us to praise that wisdom when we see it in others. And then finally, why is it here? Because it points us to Christ, our wisdom. It points us to Jesus. Remember, I was talking about 1 Corinthians 13 back when this sermon started about 4 hours ago. It was about 1 Corinthians 13 or the Sermon on the Mount, this idealized picture of love, one that inspires us and challenges us. Well, who fully embodies it? The Lord Jesus. And you take out the word love from 1 Corinthians 13 and just put in the word Jesus. Jesus is patient. Jesus is kind. Jesus does not envy. He does not boast. He keeps no record of wrongs. He rejoices in the truth. Points to him. What about the Sermon on the Mount? And the impossible task of having our own holiness, our own righteousness, exceed that of the scribes and Pharisees. Well, that passage is designed to make us ask, who can possibly fulfill the law of God perfectly? Who can live this perfect life the way Christ describes? The answer? He can. He did for you. His perfect righteousness clothes you, Christian. He did it for you. And same here, that as we read this perfect description of wisdom, we see his own silhouette. This perfect picture of love, love of others, tireless diligence, compassion, wisdom, trustworthiness. It all points to him. And so, ladies of City Church, do not look at this passage in despair. Look at this passage and be inspired. But more than that, look at this passage and see him. The wisdom of God made flesh for you. Set your hope on him. Make him the object of your desires, the object of your affections, the object of your faith and of your trust. And he will beautify your life. He will make you noble so that you are more precious than rubies, because he is. And gentlemen, do not see this passage as a checklist to look through the dating profile or to tick off on a first date as you sit in Nando's. No, see him, the one who shows us the tremendous value, beauty, and worth of wisdom. We are called all to look to him, to esteem him, to follow him, and to live wisely in him.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to this week's sermon. If you found this helpful or want to know more about City Church Dublin, visit our website found in the links below.